This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
Here comes the life of the party.
The Drive.
Corrupting the minds and the hearts of our children.
With Josh Graham.
Programmed for low expectations.
On Sports Hub Triad. Woo!
There is what I believe to be a blatant example of SEC bias and a double standard in college football that we'll get to in just a minute, but we have breaking news on the NBA front. First reported by Shams Charania of The Athletic, Zion Williamson, the team now confirms, has undergone successful arthroscopic knee surgery addressing a torn right lateral meniscus. They describe it as being a routine debridement and that he's going to miss an estimated 6 to 8 weeks. Adrian Wojnarowski's initial report on Friday said that they ruled out a serious knee injury and that he was going to miss a few weeks. How do you go about differentiating couple to a few to what makes several? Like, I'm asking on a general sense. Like, if you're texting a friend, I'll see you in a couple hours, how is that different than I'll see you in a few hours? And how is that different than I'll see you in several hours? How do you distinguish that? It's kind of like asking, what's afternoon versus night? Because some would say 5:30 is in the evening, and others would say that's in the afternoon. I'm asking the important questions here on The Drive Desk.
To me, couple means two or less. I'm going to see you in two or less hours.
Couple is two. It makes sense that that is the case.
Few is vague.
Okay, how vague is few?
3 to 4.
3 to 4 hours possibly?
Right.
Maybe five.
Five is several?
Five is several.
I'll see you in several minutes, 5 minutes. That seems a bit excessive. Hmm. I think 5 minutes still qualifies as a few. Five would be a few. But when you get into six to eight, I think, is several weeks.
Yeah.
That's several. 6 to 8, which also would not accurately depict what Woj said in the tweet on Friday. So Woj was wrong. He was flat out wrong.
Was he wrong because someone told him wrong info?
It doesn't matter. If you're a reporter, you got to double down. You got to trust your sources. You got to also double check on your information. You got to make sure your sources check out. What Woj reported Friday was wrong. And I said here that I was a little concerned. Emphasis on the little. When the first Woj report came out, because they described it as right knee soreness, precautionary, going to be out just a few weeks. You know, not 6 to 8, because that would qualify as several, as we discussed here. A few weeks. That's the way that they framed it. This is serious. It's a knee surgery, and the Pelicans do not want it to be framed that way, because why else do you see in this press release that is literally three or four sentences, the routine debridement? Arthroscopic knee surgery, torn right lateral meniscus. The routine debridement was performed by Dr. Jason Folk with the assistance from team orthopedic surgeon Dr. Misty Surrey.
They had to know this Friday, right? Because you don't find this out Monday morning and decide to do the surgery the same day.
Zion looked great in preseason. He's crushing people. We don't know when this happened.
He sat the last
Everybody was just excited. Now nobody's going to care about this game tomorrow night between the Raptors and the Pelicans. Here's the other thing. The report was actually lessened. So Woj put out the tweet Friday. Kristen Ledlow goes on TNT later that night and says that they haven't even ruled him out for Tuesday. That's what they said, contradicting Woj's initial report. Ledlow was told something by the Pelicans, because again, she's working the game over there, and was told that he wasn't ruled out for Tuesday night. He was out for the Knicks game Friday night, wasn't ruled out for Tuesday. So what happened here?
So we have to assume one of two things here, right? Either the Pelicans are incompetent, or The Pelicans knew exactly what they were doing and didn't want to reveal to their fan base that Zion Williamson was not going to be available for the first 2 months
of the
season. Or
there's a third option here. Zion got hurt between Friday and now. That's a third option. Hurt himself more from Friday to today.
Somehow I doubt that.
Yeah, I don't.
Right, but it's an option.
Right.
We'll throw it in there.
That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
Right. We'll throw it into the box of options here. It's puzzling. So I'm going from a little bit concerned to concerned.
Yeah.
Not very concerned. Not this guy isn't going to have a great career. This guy's got no shot to win Rookie of the Year. Not going that far. I am concerned. That's where I sit now. Because it is the same knee as the one that forced him out and cost Duke a regular season title in the ACC. He goes down, his shoe explodes, Barack Obama's courtside and says, his shoe broke. We all remember that. Same knee that he hurt there is the one that just got operated on.
He's been hurt 3 times in the past 12 months to his knee.
I don't know if he got hurt in Summer League. I don't know if that happened.
That's the same leg, isn't it?
Well, no. They were talking about conditioning right after the award circuit. That's what they were citing that to. It wasn't him injured. It was his conditioning what was focused on there.
That is my primary concern with Zion.
But it seems that Zion, his conditioning was better leading into the preseason. That's right. What we heard all along, and he looked great in a couple, using the word correctly, preseason game.
How much conditioning can he get in with a bum knee?
And also, do we know what his height and weight is officially with the Pelicans? Because they are tightening up on that. More specific height measurements, even though I still don't buy that KD is 6'9 and 3/4 or 6'10, wherever they put him there.
He's been weird about that his whole career.
I don't know. They said they're going to be more accurate with these things, though. I don't know if he lost any weight between finishing up at Duke, where he was officially listed at 6'7", 285, and now. I don't know the answer to that. But now I think there are reasonable people concerned, legitimately concerned about Zion now. It's not just nonsense. It's not stuff you can easily dismiss. It's right here on the forefront. He's set to get 2 national TV games in his first week in the NBA, Tuesday night, tomorrow night, against the defending champion Raptors as they're putting up a banner. And then they were set to be on national TV on Friday, too. And the NBA is losing out on that, and we're losing out on Zion for 6 to 8 weeks. It really is a bummer.
The NBA, NBA.com officially has Zion listed at 6'7", 285 as of today.
All right. Shifting things to Clemson. It doesn't seem right to me that Clemson gets knocked down a ranking from number 3 to number 4 in the AP poll yesterday. You choose how much stock you put into the AP poll. I don't put a lot into it, but I'm not someone who says it doesn't matter. It does matter, perception, when you're a contender trying to win an ACC championship, also trying to win consecutive college football playoff national titles in the case of Clemson. I don't see a scenario now with the way the ACC is being disrespected, the way the Tigers are being treated, which I believe is unfair. I don't see a scenario they get in with one loss. The good news is the college football playoff committee, they may not share the same views as the AP voter. There's also, I don't think, any scenario Clemson is left out of the playoff with an undefeated record in an ACC championship. Notre Dame's number 9. I don't really see anything on their schedule that will have them leapfrog Clemson at any point, especially since the Irish lost a game earlier in the year in Athens. Also, the Pac-12's not really a serious contender in this for the 3rd consecutive year. Here's why I'm upset. Clemson wins on the road against 4-2 Louisville by 35 points. And they still dropped them. The same Louisville team, a little over a week ago, that went into Winston-Salem and beat Wake Forest, put 62 up at BB&T Field. Clemson beats that team in their house by 35. Yet, AP voters saw enough to say the Tigers should be leapfrogged by an Ohio State team that dismantled 1-4 Northwestern. Not Clemson, that's fine. If you want to hold Clemson to that standard, I get it. Ohio State's been great. It's hard to really poke any holes into Ohio State. And the win against Cincinnati, 42-0, and some of the other wins they've gotten look better as the season's gone on, which might elevate them over Clemson considering how bad things are in the ACC. I understand that. What I have an issue with, and where I actually buy SEC bias, they're not holding Alabama to the same standard. How can you justify, reasonably, Alabama being ranked number one over LSU? How can you do it? LSU has two top 15 wins. They're crushing everybody. Alabama didn't score an entire quarter against Duke. Struggled that first half. Struggled in the first half against Tennessee. Oh, but Josh, Tua was hurt. Even when Tua was in, they were laboring their way through it. Yet, they don't get knocked down, despite how great LSU is. Why? Why is that? How about this? Another name program, Texas. How come Texas allows near 50 points to Kansas and needs a game-winning field goal by Dicker the Kicker himself at the horn to win that game? How come they enter the week at 15 and stay at 15? They don't get knocked down a peg. No. Not Texas. Not Alabama. But Clemson does when they're winning these games. And not only winning the games, beating a 4-2 football team that just got off a win against a ranked Wake Forest team. Beat them by 35 freaking points. You're going to knock them down a rank. It is maddening to me how that happened. Yes, Aaron.
I hear all of that. All those are valid points. But you did just get done last week talking about how terrible the ACC was this year in football.
It is. It is terrible. But when other teams aren't holding their own, you got to hold them to the same standard. Alabama facing Duke in that same ACC. Tennessee just as bad as bottom tier ACC teams. They are that bad. And Alabama doesn't get knocked out because nobody would dare cross Nick Saban and knock Alabama out of the number one slot outside of them losing.
Honestly, if you look at Alabama and Clemson's schedules side by side to date, like what they've done, I mean, they have a common opponent in Texas A&M, but I mean, they look the same. So I don't understand. And the results look fairly the same too. The only thing that stands out is Clemson beating Carolina by a point.
Which is the only time since Trevor Lawrence started and finished games for Clemson over a year ago that a game was decided by less than two touchdowns. The only time that that's happened. The average win for Clemson was by over four touchdowns. And when you look at the results, 45-14 over Florida State, crushing Charlotte, crushing Syracuse, beating Texas A&M by two touchdowns, beating everyone. The narrative was, oh, Clemson didn't look great against Georgia Tech. They covered 37.5 and won by 38 points. Oh, Clemson, they made mistakes against Louisville. Won the game by 35 points. What are we doing here if that's not good enough? If 35 points isn't good enough? The good news is this. The offense, they might be struggling a little bit. But the narrative, if you remember it going into the year, the only way things go south for Clemson is if the defense is what's struggling. But is the offense good enough to just overpower all of that and make it a moot point? The defense actually has looked great, and that's the scary thing here, that they're winning by 35 points, and the offense and Trevor Lawrence is struggling. And we know what Trevor Lawrence is capable of doing, and Justin Ross and T. Higgins and Travis Etienne. When that gets right, and we're confident with that personnel, it will get right. The defense has already shown us, as being the question mark going into the year, that they are up to task, despite losing all those defensive linemen. The Clemson Tigers are still my favorite right now to win the national title. They are, because the path is easiest for them, and also I haven't given up hope, and I'm not discounting a 35-point win against Louisville.
But from what you've seen the past 3 years, in the top five right now, would you put, like, on a neutral field, would you take any other of these teams over Clemson right now? Alabama, LSU, Ohio State?
If I had Oklahoma? To pull out, LSU and Ohio State would be the top two teams. And then it would be Clemson, then Alabama.
Well, you would take them to beat Clemson on a neutral field right now? That's my question to you.
No, I take Clemson. It's two different questions. What have you done to earn rankings, and who do I think is a better team? I don't think anybody has more talent than Clemson. I don't. But LSU has earned being the number one team. And the double standard that exists here, the ACC teams are getting knocked down. Alabama isn't when they're struggling. LSU fans should be ticked off. They should be the number one team in the country right now. You are listening to WSGS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPCM Burlington, WMFR High Point. Those signals making up Sports Hub Triad.
You wanted to hear some great sports talk? Well, here it is.
Oh, what an appallingly ironic outcome.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
It's not ironic. It's just coincidental.
On Sports Hub Triad.
Being joined by the great Bob Ryan of ESPN, somebody who's one of the leading faces as well of the National Sports Media Association, too, which is home here in the Triad in Winston-Salem specifically. Bob, I don't know if we've spoken since the NSMA. I know it's been a very long time. Ron Rivera earlier today said Cam Newton's going to be working on the side, not practicing ahead of the Panthers' matchup against the 6-0 San Francisco 49ers. Kyle Allen, as you know, has won four consecutive games going into the bye week for the Carolina Panthers. What's your perspective on what should happen once Cam Newton's foot heals?
This is one of those circumstances you get every now and then, and which makes coaches' lives hell, because he's got a clear decision, assuming that Cam is ready to go, when that in time. Obviously, they responded well to Allen, and obviously Cam was far from the Cam of a couple of years ago when we last saw him, and hasn't been that Cam for a while. And injury was, you'd like to think, it's the only reason. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, and that if he were healed up, he could be the Cam of old, because he sure wasn't when we've of late. So I don't know, if he's healthy and he's 100% healthy. But the thing is, and this is very similar to there's another one going on. You don't have to. Oh, you won't have to rush him back. There shouldn't be a sense of urgency given how well Allen has played. I'll just put it that way.
Right, because the New Orleans Saints, they're dealing with this, and Teddy Bridgewater. So Bridgewater,
yeah.
But here's what I find interesting about that, Bob. Among Saints fans, there's no question. Okay, Drew Brees, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, right? He's one of the best players in their franchise's history. There's no question. No matter how well Teddy Bridgewater plays, when Drew Brees is ready to go, he's going to play. But when it comes to Kyle Allen and Cam Newton, we see the argument of, hey, don't rock the boat with things going well. I don't see any of those narratives in New Orleans, despite the fact they've won five in a row.
Oh, no, there isn't, because you're right, and you identified this. There's a clear difference there, which is obviously that Drew Brees is a deity, and he is going to the Hall of Fame. He can start the speech, he can start working on it now. Whenever it's going to be 5-6 years, whenever he quits, plus five, and he goes. But Cam Newton's not in that category. Cam Newton's had some flashes of brilliance in his career, and he's going to be retired saying, I was a damn good football player. But he's not going to have a Drew Brees career. You're right. It's not exactly comparable circumstances.
Okay, Bob Ryan's with us here on Twitter, @GlobeBobRyan. You're one of the guys I rely on talking baseball in an age where it seems like people either talk, two sides out of their mouth about baseball, don't follow it as closely as we used to on a national scale. I'm looking at the odds here, and it's the biggest odds in terms of a favorite in the World Series we've seen since the Red Sox and the Rockies in 2007, talking about the Astros, who clinched this weekend to face the Washington Nationals. How wide do you believe the talent gap to be between the Astros and Nats?
This is a great. I'm glad you brought this one up, because this amuses me. First of all, you have to step back, take a deep breath, everybody, and realize what are odds. Odds. Why? What constitutes odds? Why are they made? Odds are Vegas's opinion of what they think your perception is. They're making an assumption about the public reaction to the teams in advance, and the assumption is that the public thinks that this is not close, that the Astros are prohibitive favorites. If that is true, the public are fools. Did they not notice the pitching that took place? Did they not know that this is the one team that has not one, not two, not three, but four quality starters? That the fourth starter has twice in his career taken no-hitters into the seventh inning of a postseason game, most recently 2 weeks ago? This to me is a pick'em series. And I respect and I'm going to be happy to sit back and watching, you know. But I just find it highly amusing. But that's all odds are, and in any sport, they're Vegas's opinion on what they think of the perception of the fans is going to be. And apparently, they think everybody's been overwhelmed by the Astros as if Scherzer and Strasburg don't exist. And I don't get it, frankly. I do get it. I just think it's ridiculous.
And Anibal Sanchez had a really good start in Game 1 of that. And LCS. Yeah, so yeah, I agree. I mean, when you look at just the starting pitching, it seems to be there. And then position players, it seems like the Nationals hold up well too. Houston obviously has the guys who've done it before, but then with Rendon,
Bob, there's your edge. All right, they got two edges, I think, that you have to consider. But I don't think they add up to giving that much of, you know, that just to create a big gap. The two edges are, they do. They have experience, and they're going for, you know, they're going for another 2 and 3, and they could have easily had 3 in a row. And they're really good. You know, they've been there. And I think if you're going that checkbox game, you know, go position by position, go pitching, and then you get down to the end, coaching, managing. In this case, you got to give the edge to Hinch. You have to. And it might come into play. It might not. But sometimes it does more often than people think in a short series in baseball, World Series particularly. So I think that's true. But I don't think it adds up to a big gap. You know, I mean, yeah, they got some. I mean, who doesn't like Altuve? Who doesn't like Correa? Who doesn't like Bregman? Who doesn't like Springer? You know, but Rendon's pretty good. Turner's pretty good. You know, they got some guys. Soto. Oh my God.
Yeah.
You know. So you know, there's some guys that can hurt you on that team. And when they're backed by the kind of potential starting pitching they got, I mean, you know, come on.
Follow Bob Ryan on Twitter @GlobeBobRyan. We're going to be joined by one of the busiest guys in all of sports media later in the week, Kevin Harlan, who you can hear tonight on Monday Night Football. He will be on the call tomorrow on TNT for Lakers, Clippers. It's the start of the NBA season. No Zion Williamson in the front end of that doubleheader, as the knee soreness is going to cost him probably the first couple of weeks, according to the reporting done by your colleague Adrian Wojnarowski at ESPN. Which NBA preseason contender, and it seems like this year there are more of them than we've become accustomed to in the league, do you have the most questions about going into the year?
That's good. I think in the East, I would say Philly still, even though they have loaded up over the last year. I think it's a very important year for Ben Simmons, okay? So I think Philly, if you're going to say the contenders are Philly and Milwaukee, draw a line, then Boston, Indiana, and
they're in a different category. We don't know what we're getting from there.
Right now, okay? And then the West, of course, the Battle of L.A. is paramount. And then Denver, who people forget had a great record last year, and I love Denver.
Who do you like out of the Lakers and Clippers?
They've got one, yeah. So they're not perfect teams, God knows. How do I like? And that's a good one. I've had this discussion. I think the Lakers overall roster, I take it over if I had to pick one, and you said you can have one of these rosters, and I'll give you whatever coach you want, and you know, off you go into the season. Which roster though would you take? And I would take LA's roster, but not by a lot. And I will certainly listen to your argument.
Which LA?
You know, and to the contrary.
You said LA. Which LA?
The Lakers. They're the Lakers. You know, yeah. The Clippers. They're still the younger.
Move them
brother,
to Inglewood.
You know,
they'll be the Inglewood,
you know,
Clippers.
They should still be in Buffalo. You know, that's a long story. But they should, by the way. That's the biggest.
Or San Diego.
The biggest screwing ever in the NBA franchise was Seattle, But second biggest, and not by too much, was what happened to Buffalo. There was no reason why the Buffalo Braves shouldn't still exist.
Let's get to the most important stuff, Bob. Have you seen any movies lately? The Joker, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
I've actually seen two in 2 days, and after a big drought. We saw Judy the other day, and of course, Renee Zellweger is fantastic. And, mm-hmm. and what amazes me is she does her own singing. She doesn't sound like Judy Garland because that would be ridiculously impossible. But she can sing and surprisingly well. And her acting, her Judy Garland dish, her assumption of the Judy Garland personality and persona and stage mannerisms and charisma is phenomenal. It's certainly an Oscar nomination worthy performance. Anybody that's interested in that music and the Judy Garland, you got to go see it. And then we saw a documentary, which should be must-seen for every American who has a vote in America and will be seen by, like, nobody, and that is Where's My Roy Cohn? Anybody wants to know how we got a certain place politically, they got to go see Roy Cohn movie. And unfortunately, people aren't going to see it.
I thought you were going to say Mike Wallace is here, the documentary.
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh,
but
you'd really like that one.
The Roy Cohn one is chilling, frankly. It's so good.
I got to know. See, we're getting close to Halloween, Bob, and there are laws that I learned today. This is true. ABC 11 outside of Raleigh reported. There are places in North Carolina that are actually enforcing legal limits on trick-or-treating, saying that if you're over the age of 13, there's even instances you could get sent to jail for 6 months and fined. In situations here,
what's the thought process behind this?
I have no idea.
I mean, what is the thought process?
Chesapeake, Virginia. I think this is where it originated. How old's too old, Bob? How old's too old to trick or treat?
I don't know, but I just think there's. If somebody wants to do it and they don't feel ridiculous, then they should be allowed to do it. Period. I always say I've lost the capacity for shock in sports a long time ago, and I guess we've all lost the capacity for shock in public life and cultural, shall we say, cultural discussions.
Yeah, I'll send you that link on Twitter. But Bob, it's good to hear your voice.
Let me give you a recommendation
listeners.
If they want to brighten their day, okay?
All right.
Go to YouTube. Go find the Korean call of the Altuve home run. It's out there.
All right. Let's find this right now. Let's see if we can find the Korean home run call. See, do you like listening back to those calls? I wonder, in my mind, I love broadcasters on the TV call who lay off. Back in the day,
Joe Buck, full credit.
Joe, yeah.
He didn't say a word for 2 minutes. Knew what to do, but that's us. Come on, you got to hear this. The Spanish call goes without saying. You know, we're so used to the Antes Cantor and all that. That goes without saying. But the Korean one is priceless.
And you would know, Bob, because once upon a time you were a play-by-play man for Boston College.
I certainly was. 4 years worth of basketball, most fun I ever had.
Well, we will grace our listeners' ears with this Korean home run call in just a little bit, Bob. Appreciate you giving us the recommendation and also spending some time with us. It's good to hear from you.
Okay, good, Josh. Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Bob Ryan on Twitter, @GlobeBobRyan. You can find him. All right. See, if Bob is saying that we need to listen to something, I think we should take the recommendation because it is always a lot of fun when you get into latter points of NFL postseason games, into Major League Baseball, NBA to a shorter degree, you would have multiple languages broadcasting big moments. And it's good to hear the local radio calls. I don't know who does the Astros, but John Sterling for the Yankees, hearing him disappointed when Altuve hit the bomb, hearing Joe Buck on TV. I was actually in the car on my way back from Wake Forest, Florida State, Saturday night. This was quarter after midnight. And it was Dan Shulman calling the game on ESPN radio. And it's hard to find anybody who does it as good as Dan Shulman does. But I'm willing to listen to other broadcasters and admit that I'm wrong. Even if I don't understand the words that are saying, I think inflection can be interpreted. I think you can listen to voices in and just tell kind of what's going on by simply listening to the broadcast. Anywho, the drive brought to you in part by our friends at Pie Guys Pizza and More. Find them in Clemens. You can locate them right off of Louisville Clemens Road. It's in the Kinnaman Village Commons. Try the Graham Slam Pizza today. Try the Moravian Sugar Cane Pie. Try the Buffalo Wings. Tell them that I sent you for that. Obviously, you'd try the Graham Slam if you're a fan of this show. In Clemens, it is Pie Guys Pizza and More, online at pieguys.com. Okay, I think I've stalled enough. Do we have this?
Maybe. Possibly. We think we've dug it up here.
Are you trying to figure out what language it is that you're listening to? That might be part of the problem.
Maybe. Well, it's in Spanish, and then there's a Korean one, too. So we're trying to get down to the Korean one.
All right.
Now, granted, we haven't had a chance to actually listen to this yet. So.
All right. Let's just play something over the air. I'm down for this.
You sure?
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
조선의 승리를 응원하고 있습니다. 왼쪽으로 높게! 알투베가 결국 휴스턴을 월드3로 견인합니다! 끝내기 없는 호세 알투베! 지난 3년 동안 두 번째 월드3 진출을 확정 짓는 알투베의 끝내기 없는
Aaron Gabriel, I want you to translate what he just said there for the audience very quickly.
He just said, here's the pitch. Oh, holy crap! Altuve just blasted the ball out of the park. Man, that was bananas. Did you see that?
So there's the expert translation as well from Aaron.
Speak fluent Korean.
Yeah. I could tell there. Yeah, that's really good.
Pretty good.
Is Appalachian State in the driver's seat for a New Year's Six bowl game? Oh, and we'll get to Wake Forest football, too. That's all next.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham.
Take it from me, you're driving everyone crazy.
Mission accomplished on Sports Hub Triad.
I have quite the conundrum when it comes to the ACC and the college basketball AP poll that's released. I hate the AP poll, but I'm so excited about ACC basketball getting set to start that I look at them, I dissect them, and I take them too seriously. But the AP poll is out today. There are four ACC teams in the top 11. Duke is fourth, Louisville fifth, North Carolina ninth, Virginia 11th. No other ACC team makes up any part of the top 25. I have three big issues with the preseason poll. By the way, number one, Michigan State, Cassius Winston is back for that team. They have a lot returning. They seem to be the common sense pick for the number one team in the country. Kentucky with their great recruiting class, two. Kansas, three. And let's start with Kansas among my concerns. Kansas, they're not a top five team in my mind. This team lost six games in the Big 12 last year. And you're supposed to get me excited about the guys you have coming back? Granted, Silvio De Sousa, he was ineligible and just practiced with the team all of last year. He's going to be able to go this year, and it's a good front court. And you had Udoka Azubuike, who was hurt halfway through last year. I'm not discounting the front court. I'm not even discounting Devin Dotson, who is probably the best scorer among the guards who's returning. Shout out to Charlotte, by the way. I just don't think that this team is as good as Duke or Louisville or Michigan State. I don't think they should be ranked where they are. They might not be a top 10 team by season's end. Usually you bank on Kansas having one of those great recruiting classes. This year they didn't really have that. 15th ranked class, so not a bad class, but I don't think this is a great team. I think it's a good team. Just one that happens to be ranked a little bit too high. Gonzaga probably a little bit too high, too, at number 8. I was surprised they were in the top 15, considering all that they lost. Zach Norvell Jr., who looked very good with the Lakers during preseason play, he raises serious concerns about what the Zags have at point guard. And Killian Tilly's the one player who's returns that you're really excited about. Rui Hachimura gone off this team. Brandon Clark gone as well. Tilly was hurt for a lot of last season, so I don't really trust that at this point either. But putting those teams aside, let's go to the ACC. Virginia deserves more love. If you're the national championship winning team, you should be ranked in the top 10 in the poll the next year. Remember that North Carolina team that won the title in 2009 and was awful the year after, didn't even go to the NCAA tournament? It's the only team Roy had that didn't make the NCAA. That team was ranked in the top 10 preseason after they won the title. So they lose Danny Green, Tyler Hansborough, Ellington, Lawson, all dim boys. And we were supposed to get really excited about Deion Thompson, Marcus Guignard, and the Ware twins. Oh yeah, let's make that team a top 10 ranked team. Virginia isn't as stripped as that team was. Virginia, I almost feel like, is underrated at this point at 11. And that's not usually the conversation you're having with a preseason poll after you win a national championship. Virginia returns Mamadi Diakite, who hit the most important shot in Virginia basketball history, I'd argue. That shot was assisted by Kihei Clark, the starting point guard, who's back as well. Braxton Key, he's back. He was the leading rebounder for Virginia coming off the bench. And I really like Jay Huff. I don't know if the statistic is kept, but I believe Huff to be the only person last year who dunked on Zion Williamson, who put Zion on a poster. That was Huff. Here's the only issue with that. Zion fought back. And if you remember him going through three defenders and dunking with the right hand in Cameron, that was on Jay Huff. So while he dunked on Huff, Zion had a thing to say about it by games in. I like Jay Huff. From Durham, North Carolina guy. I like this Virginia team. Don't overlook them. I like them more than I like North Carolina at this moment. You might think that's a hot take, but North Carolina's losing a lot. And I think they're losing a lot more than Virginia is, if I'm being honest. The big question they have to answer is, Mamadi Diakite, his lack of scoring the first few years of him being at Virginia, is that more a product of him being unable to score? His game not being developed enough to score consistently? Or him just simply not being asked to score? Same thing with Trey Jones. Like, Duke had all these guys who were putting shots up, Reddish, Zion, O'Connell, you name it, all these players, Reddish, attempting threes. How many shots were left for Jones? Same deal here for Diakite. When you're losing Jerome and Guy and Hunter, how many shots were actually there for Hunter to take? That's a big question. So I really like Virginia. I think that they probably should be ranked higher than where they are. Also, I have no idea how Florida State's not in the top 25. No clue. Trent Forrest is going to be one of the best point guards in the nation, one of the four best point guards in the ACC. I say top four because you already know what you're getting with Markel Johnson, Trey Jones, and Cole Anthony. Forrest is right there with those guys. He returns. He's a senior. This is a pretty inexperienced team, but with the transfers coming in, they're not going to lack scoring in the backcourt. They were a strength in numbers team. They have a great coach in Leonard Hamilton. They made it to the Elite Eight 2 years ago, Sweet 16 last season. They won 26 games last year. They were in the ACC tournament championship game. Don't sleep on Florida State. They should be in the preseason top 25. So those are my three objections to the AP poll. Paul Meyerberg, we'll get to college football with him in about 10 minutes. National college football writer for USA Today Sports. Your thoughts are welcome on Twitter at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600. Yes, Des.
Maybe it's just me, but let me get your opinion on this. Just looking at this initial preseason poll, it feels different than the past couple of years where I know they're kind of trying to prop Michigan State up as that the team to follow all year.
And they should.
They should win it all and all that good stuff. But it feels like there's not really one squad that, like, the nation will rally around. Like, last year it was Duke. Everyone was attracted to Zion and R.J. Barrett and all these stars and everything. And more often than not, it is Duke with the classes that they bring in. It's easy to get attracted to these high-profile kids. But the Duke class this year is not as high-profile. Kentucky, their class wasn't as high-profile as we're used to. You mentioned Kansas. I don't know. It just feels like a team like a Louisville or Maryland might be there at the end of the year, and no one's going to be talking about them as much until we get to, you know, the end of the year.
Michigan State was an obvious choice for number one with Winston back. Also, you got to remember, they went on that run to the Final Four last year without Joshua Langford, who got hurt at a very key stretch. So he's going to be back, and they don't recruit scrubs at Michigan State. And one of the biggest testaments, I think, to the coaching of Tom Izzo is that he gets these great players and they stick around. Like, when you think of great Michigan State basketball players the last, I don't know, 20 years, you look at Zach Randolph, who stuck around. You look at last 10 years, Draymond Green stuck around. Gary Harris stuck around.
Miles Bridges
stayed an extra year when he probably would have went higher if he did not. Adrian Payne stuck around. These Michigan State players, they love playing for Izzo. And it's just an incredible feat and something you shouldn't underscore or undervalue. The fact that you're able to recruit the top player and then keep them in school based on what you're selling to them and how much they enjoy the experience of playing in your program. So they have that going for them. Ron Rivera updated the quarterback situation for the Panthers kind of today. He said that Kyle Allen is going to start on Sunday against San Francisco. Cam Newton isn't going to practice per se, but he's going to be working on the side. He's going to be with team trainers all week. They're not trying to rush him back. Adam Schefter last week said that he would be healthy enough to practice this week, but it doesn't seem he is going to, at least at this point. Let's hear Ron Rivera say something and try to glean some substance out of it.
Well, other than having to answer you guys' questions, I think it's been pretty smooth. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. I mean, all I can do is just tell you guys where we are with him, what the trainers have told me. Tell you that, you know, he's done his job. He's done exactly what we've needed from him, and we'll continue to go forward until things change.
Did you get anything out of that, Des?
Nope. Basically the same thing I knew when I woke up this morning.
Neither did I. Mission accomplished, Ron Rivera.
Yeah.
Is Clemson getting a fair shake? Is Appalachian State in the driver's seat for a New Year's Six bowl game? We'll ask Paul Meyerberg of USA Today Sports next.
Sports Talk.
Saluting the fellow sportsman.
If you're talking about it,
I'm talking truth.
We're talking about it.
Who are you talking to?
Sports fans everywhere.
This is
Radio
The Drive with Josh Graham.
Again, I want to reinforce this point home. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy. I don't believe 9/11 was a hoax. I don't believe that the government's withholding information about aliens. I don't think television networks similarly are saying, we have a television deal with the SEC, so we want all of our shows to talk about the SEC. There are people who buy SEC bias in that regard. I believe if any league wins six consecutive national titles, we're going to talk about those leagues a little bit more, I think. But I do buy it in this regard. There is respect that has been invested in, that has been earned with the SEC, and it's caused there to be a different standard held to other programs and other leagues than what you have at the SEC. And I'm specifically talking about Clemson, and I'm interested in the national perspective from Paul Meyerberg, who now joins us from USA Today Sports. I see Clemson going on the road, beating a Louisville team that we saw here in Winston-Salem, beat a ranked Deke team a little over a week ago. The score is a 35-point margin, yet they fall after Ohio State crushes a 1-4 Northwestern team. But it's not just the Clemson portion of this, of them dropping, that bothers me. It's the standard that we hold to, maybe, since I brought up the SEC, Alabama. They struggled a little bit this weekend against Tennessee. Nobody seems to have any quarrels with the fact that they remain number one. LSU's beaten two top 15 teams, though, and they're rolling along, and they're number two as opposed to Alabama, which remains there. I think we have Paul Meyerberg now. So do you think that this standard that Clemson's being held to by the AP voters is fair?
Hey, Josh, I don't know if it's fair necessarily. I mean,
it's easy to kind of live in a vacuum. You say that Ohio State's looked gangbusters, and they have. And I think they deserve some kind of recognition and respect in terms of being in contention for number one, two, three, four, whatever. I think for Clemson, there's inevitably going to be a blowback. And I think you've seen it to a degree because of the hype that kind of joined this team all offseason. It was the expectation that they wouldn't just win every game, they would dominate. So when it's 21-20 against UNC, there's the idea of, okay, well, you know, obviously they're not going to be any good. Trevor Lawrence is going to be the greatest quarterback since Peyton Manning. All of a sudden, he's got more picks than all of last year. Oh, okay. So Clemson's not any good. I don't buy into it. I think Clemson's just as good as they've been. Maybe not quite as good as they were last year, but I think that's a little bit expected given some changes on defense. I'm all in on Clemson. You know, I don't see there's a team out there that, as of this point, you can say unequivocally, oh, this team is better than Clemson. This team is the number one team in the country. I think Clemson, no matter what, is right there front and center in that debate.
Here's what I find ironic about it, though, Paul. If I would have told you people were questioning the Clemson Tigers in October, and then I told you it wasn't the defense that they were concerned about, it was the offense, what would you have said to me?
Well, I think I would probably say Clemson's in good shape. You know, I think if you went into the year and you thought, okay, the offense is going to be where we're going to have issues as we get to the end of October, November, I think Clemson would have taken it. So I think they knew what they had on offense. I don't think they knew when I visited in August what they were going to get on defense, though. Obviously, you have Brent Venables and you have this track record. The assumption was they'd still be a top five unit in the ACC or top three or top 10 nationally. So, you know, that's the kind of state of things for Clemson. Like I said a couple weeks ago when I wrote about them after Syracuse, if your biggest concern right now with Clemson is Trevor Lawrence, then you really shouldn't be concerned about Clemson at all, because to worry about Trevor Lawrence is to waste your time on stuff that you don't need to worry about.
Do you envision a scenario where an unbeaten Clemson gets left out of the college football playoff, or one where a one-loss Tigers might get in?
No. There's no scenario in the world, barring NCAA sanctions or Clemson disbands, that they're not going to get in at 13-0. There's zero possibility of that. They've been in the playoff 4 years in a row. They've won two of the past three national titles. There's just no chance in the world that they would not be in at 13-0. No shot. I do think that there is a chance, and we'll know in a couple weeks on the first Tuesday when they do release those the first playoff standings. We'll know if we have a bit of a Florida State situation, you know, Jameis Winston's sophomore year, where the committee looks at Clemson and says, well, they look good. They've beaten these teams. They've had one close call, but we don't know about the quality of these teams. We do know who LSU and Alabama and Ohio State and so on have beaten. So I wouldn't shock me necessarily if all these teams are still unbeaten, if Clemson's three, I mean, maybe four, but I don't think there's any really realistic scenario at all where they don't get in if they're unbeaten.
One loss in 2016, Pittsburgh upset Clemson. They still found a way to get in. If it's, let's say, Wake Forest, since they are the only other ACC team ranked in the top 25, if they beat the Tigers but Clemson still somehow goes to the championship game and wins, any shot?
Yeah, they still have a shot. You know, I do think that we're not counting for the sort of chaos that inevitably happens in November. I mean, like, I was asked a question the other day. You look at these five unbeaten teams, and you think to yourself, there's no way any one of these two teams are going to lose. I mean, other than Alabama, LSU, because they'll beat each other. These other teams just aren't going to lose. What have we seen from them? What have we seen from their opponents? They just won't lose. Then Ohio State gets bombed by Purdue, you know, or Clemson, like you said, loses to Pittsburgh. So craziness happens. I just think Clemson at 13-1, unless you have Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Alabama, and then, you know, maybe in Oregon, that's what keeps them out. But I really can't see it. I really can't. I think the committee will respect Clemson too much and what they've achieved this year, the last few years, to keep them out.
And it's week by week that it seems one of those top 10 teams get picked off. Georgia at home against South Carolina in this past weekend. Lovie Smith and his beard beating the Wisconsin Badgers as Illinois pulled off the upset. We are chatting with Paul Meyerberg. You can follow him on Twitter, at Paul Meyerberg. Read his stuff, USA Today Sports. Around here, Appalachian State is a big deal. And the Mountaineers, they are 21st in the nation in the most recent AP Top 25. Again, the first college football playoff rankings won't come out until the day before Halloween, so we're a couple weeks away from that. But assuming SMU loses, because SMU, they're the team that, if they go on and win, now that Boise State's lost, they're going to be the Group of Five team that plays in the New Year's Six Bowl. What would have to happen for Appalachian State in order to get to the New Year's Six Bowl game, to be the Group of Five bid team?
Well, the easy path is to have Cincinnati lose to a Temple or lose to a Memphis in the regular season and then beat an SMU and therefore be the American Conference champion with two losses. It's that Boise lose to San Diego State and then win the Mountain West with two losses, and then they're in. It's hard for me to say. I know it's really interesting for App State fans to know the answer to this. It's hard to say right now what the committee is going to think of the Sun Belt because they've never been in the situation. They never had to consider the conference, you know. And I think it's telling, and it's something that they will rely on, unfortunately or not, that last week App State had the first win as a ranked team in Sun Belt history. So you look at the kind of pedigree of that conference compared to the pedigree of the Mountain West, which the committee is very aware of, with Boise and San Diego State and Utah State and so on. Obvious pedigree of the American with UCF having been there multiple times. I think that's an issue. But it's not like there's no road. And it's not like, you know, there's nothing to play for. There obviously is. I think if Cincinnati wins out, it's a concern. If Boise wins out, it's a concern. And obviously, like you said, if SMU wins out, it's a no-brainer.
Boise State, they have the Power 5 road win at FSU. Cincinnati, they had their one loss is to Ohio State, which we talked about how great they are, and they beat UCF, and it's a really tough league. You believe that a one-loss Cincinnati and a one-loss Boise State would get the nod over an unbeaten Appalachian State that, if they are unbeaten at the end of the year, Paul, would have two Power 5 wins
would
on the road?
Two, that's right. Yeah, and that's a big point. And when you said they beat Florida State, made me think, well, isn't beating UNC more impressive than beating Florida State right now?
Huh. South Carolina, yeah, you know, with the Georgia win.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, the case is there. I think the only point I would make, in terms of a resume, I would almost make it a little bit even with Boise State, even though obviously the Mountain West is better than the Sun Belt because you have those two group of five wins. I'm sorry, the two Power 5 wins. My concern is only this. Like I said, the perception of the Sun Belt is very likely going to be extremely poor. It's not going to be good in that room. The American reputation is going to be really good, really strong, at least in terms of this macro conversation they had about Group of Five. That's my only concern for App State. However, I think there's something very powerful, certainly in this debate, which is to a degree much less controversial than trying to find your top four. I think there's a lot of power to be had in saying we are the only unbeaten team. And if you are the only unbeaten team in the Group of Five, not to mention you have two Power 5 wins on the road, I think it really shouldn't be a debate. I think you should get in at 13-0 if you're App State. I'm just concerned that they won't because the committee will look at the Sun Belt and say it's just not nearly good enough to say that being unbeaten there is better than being one loss in the American.
How many teams do you think right now, Paul, have a legitimate argument to believe they are the number one team in the country?
I think there's a legitimate one for five. And I don't put Penn State in that group quite yet, though I have been obviously extremely impressed by Penn State overall. I thought what they did on Saturday when they had the ball for about 21 minutes to win that game showed a degree of fortitude on defense I wasn't really sure that they had. But I think you're probably looking at five. Alabama Clemson speaks for itself. LSU is interesting. They have the wins, certainly. I think winning at Texas probably doesn't look as good as it did in September, but it still counts. I'm worried about their defense. Ohio State, as much as like you want to say Clemson is a lot better than Ohio State because they've been a lot better, I don't know if it's necessarily true. I think Ohio State has looked the part, and obviously Oklahoma. All five of those teams can say we're number one. Oklahoma, the least of the five, but I think each of them can make a case to some degree.
There is legislation in the state of North Carolina with Halloween approaching, Paul, that says that you actually could face legal punishment for trick-or-treating older than 13 years old. I wonder, how old is too old in the mind of Paul Meyerberg?
You can get arrested for over 13.
According to this report from Channel 11 in Durham, there are places in Chesapeake, Virginia, and also Newport News, and several North Carolina cities that have restrictions for 12 or 13-year-olds, and also a 9 p.m. curfew that you have to follow for trick-or-treating.
Wow. Okay, I will say this. Like, if you're still trick-or-treating after 14 or 15, you're doing it with evil intent. You're probably breaking the law in what you're doing, fireworks and, you know, all sorts of stuff that I'm sure no one else does. But I think 13 is, it's like the conventional societal kind of level. Like, you want to be like, hey, son, like, you're 14. Let's not do SpongeBob this year. You want to say that to your kids, but I don't think it should be illegal. This is a free country, you know, so I think we should be able to do what we want.
Paul Meyerberg's a man of laws and a man of freedom and saying, hey, you aside from maybe doing the fireworks illegally at 14, 15 years old, that you should be able to trick-or-treat if you want to. What's the best trick-or-treating outfit that Paul Meyerberg wore as a kid?
I was the Karate Kid mostly as a kid. I did the headband and the gi. It's called a gi, the outfit that the Karate Kid wears. And so I did that most of the time.
Did you
do that for a good 5 or 6 years.
How many crane kicks?
a bunch. Off of stairs, onto stairs, off of beds, off of short shed roofs, all kinds of stuff.
You're the absolute. You're the absolute best, Paul. Thanks for playing along and spending some time with us. It's appreciated.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon.
You got it. That's Paul Meyerberg on Twitter, at Paul Meyerberg. Making a great point. There shouldn't be laws here. Can we please double check and see if that's a joke? Because I double checked. There are two news stories from separate outlets that have put this out here. And then also, there is a Reddit page, sadly, this is not The Onion, that has this story here, saying that this is legitimate. So I did my due diligence of making sure it's not Google or Wikipedia, making sure it's an actual news outlet, and finding two of them that have had the same information here. So it does seem legitimate. I'm not making a joke here. 12, 13 years old. Or 13 or 14, it's too old to be trick-or-treating and there could be legal punishment.
It seems like it's just a like a ordinance, like a town type thing. That's not, there's no state law that's on the books for
right,
this.
Right, right.
But yeah, if you live in like, say, Apex, then you can't go trick-or-treating unless you're under the age of 12 years old.
Aaron, your thoughts?
I only have personal experience with this, and I can only say that you didn't want to see a pack of me and my friends at 13, 14 years old roaming down the street at night.
Were y'all engaging in thug activities?
Just didn't want to see it.
Dez asking a question that I possibly could not ask. That I could not possibly ask.
For y'all.
Could you imagine... how that would sound if I just asked the same question that Desmond just asked you.
And I want to
listen here. Are you engaging in thug activity?
Thugonomics?
Yeah.
Just we were having fun to us, just probably terrorizing the neighborhood.
Thugs always have fun, no matter where
they
go.
We were having a ball.
Desmond, do you give out small candies or big bars?
We pretend like we're not home.
Oh.
Yeah, forget those kids.
Yeah, we turn the lights out.
I actually got big bars.
Really? See, we love those houses. We take my kids to those houses first. We have like a plan.
But what kind of candy do you usually want? Because here's what I got. Hershey Kisses, full
win.
Bar.
That's always a win.
That's always good.
Hershey's with almonds.
I don't know about that.
I'm not a big fan of those either, but
get them out
some
of your
like
house.
It. Yeah. Reese's. Pieces?
Always a win.
I've never been a Reese's Pieces guy.
Well,
that's just Dez being weird.
That's a very weird. Let's just quickly move along from that. Kit Kat bars.
Ah, winner.
Classic.
Yep.
Right. And those are, that's the complete list.
You got full bar Kit Kats?
Oh, yeah.
That's not bad. I think if I got that collection of goodies, I could accept a Hershey's with almonds.
You think the drive with Josh Graham isn't coming through here?
What's the weirdest thing you've ever gotten for trick-or-treat?
Oh. I mean, are candy apples weird?
Nah.
Well, I mean, they're a little suspect.
That's the first one I came up with.
I got a live goldfish. There was a guy sitting on his porch with bags of goldfish, you know, like at the fair, like in a cooler, and he was just giving out goldfish.
That's weird. That's pretty strange.
That's incredibly strange. Where did you get all these?
No one wanted to ask him. No one wanted to ask him.
That's actually strange as hell.
Also, until you elaborated, I thought you were actually talking about goldfish.
Like the crackers. No. The real live, actual dead in 3 days, fair goldfish.
Do you like goldfish? This guy has goldfish. And then you walk up expecting the crackers, and he's like, here's a goldfish.
That's literally how it went down.
You get a bag with a fish in it.
Yeah, that's literally how it went down.
There's a goldfish.
It ruins your night, because what are you supposed to do with a bag of like a live fish for the rest of Halloween?
Gotta hurry up, get home.
Yeah, it's like, what are you supposed to do with this?
I'm trying to think what my best outfit as a kid was. I was Batman a lot. In college, I was Harry Potter. I think we've discussed this story before.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, we had this story before where I may or may not have met a lady of the night who said, it's good to see you again.
A lady of the night?
And thinking I was another Ron Weasley that was running around.
Oh. Oh.
No, I'm pretty sure I've told this story.
Please tell me you played that off and were like.
Oh, I did.
Okay.
Oh, I did play that off.
Wild nights in Greenville, America.
Greenville, America.
Yeah.
Struggling Eagles fan Jay tweets the show. Got candy corn in a pack once.
In a pack?
Disgusting.
Like a loose pack of candy corn?
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Candy corn's like the worst candy. It's the worst.
Ooh.
butterscotch.
I can get with butterscotch.
I like butterscotch.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
But that doesn't surprise me that Dez loves butterscotch.
Really? Why?
It just sounds like, hey, I don't like these Reese's Pieces, but hey, butterscotch.
He's Werther's Originals.
Werther's, yeah, man.
Show me these butterscotch.
No, Werther's the hit, man. That hit the spot, man.
Butterscotch.
On one right now.
Tasty.
I always thought Werther's Originals was like
make sure you
candy.
Floss later on tonight because you might get stuck in your twofers.
Get a full bar of Twix or Nestle Crunch in your bag, though.
Mm.
Man.
That's right.